We're speaking now with Erin Plue. She is the Idaho Director for Trout Unlimited. Erin, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Mike Lithgow, who is the Director of Policy and Outreach for the Kalispell Tribe. Mike, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And today we're talking about the Priest River Watershed Group. And this is going to be a group I'm sure a lot of our listeners aren't familiar with, but it's doing some important work in the restoration of the Priest River for a variety of uses. One of the big ones being that's fisheries, I think, because it's been suffering. So for listeners who've never heard of the PRWG, what is it and why was it created?
The PRWG was created, I think it was fundamentally a Trout Unlimited endeavor to, because the Lower Priest River has a very poorly functioning fishery. There are still bull trout that return to the Priest River, and they go up and they spawn in the East River. And we have cutthroat trout, West Slope cutthroat trout that use the river, but all of these populations are not in great shape. And there's historically been a lot of uses on the river that left it degraded, and it continues to struggle. And so we saw it as this fishery and an opportunity to try to kind of bring back some of the vitality of that river. And it is a really special place. It's, if you've never been there, as many people have not been to the Lower Priest River, it runs from Outlet Dam at the bottom of Priest Lake, about 45 miles to where it connects to the Ponderay River. And it's a pretty special place that it doesn't get visited that much. So.
Mm-hmm. It's actually a very nice float. I've done that a few times in both kayaks and rafts, and actually inner tubes.
Oh, yeah.
There's a nice section in the summer. It is a beautiful river, and you're probably right. A lot of people really don't know about this undiscovered gem here. Well, for the watershed group, who is on the group? Who sits at the table?
Well, it's a diverse group, I think. The list of attendees is, I don't have that handy, but the Kalispell Tribe is represented on there. We've got folks from the lake. We've got folks from the river. Obviously, Trout Unlimited. Can you think of some of the other?
We have different user groups like boaters and fishing guides. License guides. And just kind of a general broad interest in that system. And then we also have participation from technical experts, would be kind of, it's a little different of a member, but pretty much every state federal agency has folks that are frequenting the meetings and helping guide our efforts, along with the tribe, as well as kind of a leader.
So why was it important to create a group of all these different interests instead of just leaving restoration to, you know, typical government groups like Idaho Fish and Game or Forest Service?
Well, I think it stood out to me as even before I worked for Trout Unlimited, I've worked in positions that have put me on the Lower Priest River. And it stood out because it's just this river that's kind of at a tipping point of just not really supporting a fishery at all. And there's been multiple efforts by agencies to do something to improve it. There is, back in the maybe 2012 or so, there was a watershed advisory group by Department of Environmental Quality that tried to kind of tackle some of the temperature issues on the tributaries. And that effort kind of fell apart because of public kind of perceptions or issues with it. Then there's also this bypass concept, or their water would be taken from the deeper part of the lake and put into the river to cool the water in the river. And that hit kind of a social protest as well. And it just is
from people at the lake.
I think primarily,
From property owners, probably.
With concerns about what that might do to the lake. And what that would look like. But either way, there was just multiple things where agencies have tried to move the needle on the river, but there's a lot of different uses, competing uses, and it has made it hard without that public support, like somebody corralling, like a public support of the work. So that was kind of what needed to be done. Hopefully that will get us to the point where the restoration plan can be implemented without pushing, getting so much pushback.
Okay. So you briefly described some of the issues facing it. We could probably dig in more on that, but let's go back in time. And if somebody could see the Lower Priest River, say 100 or 150 years ago, how would that be different from the river it is today?
I think it's hard to envision it because most of these watersheds were highly impacted by beavers and beaver activity. And, you know, prior to the trapping efforts that kind of eradicated the beavers, you had a much different ecosystem and river. It would have probably looked nothing like it does today. And so I think it's really hard to try to go back in time and look at it. We can learn a lot by the geology, and we've studied the river pretty extensively, but I think that we're never going to get it back to what it was then. What we're trying to do is, you know, it does have a lot of potential, and I think we're trying to get this collaborative together to, you know, create community buy-in so that we can move the needle in the right direction, so that we can support a fishery, so that we can support recreational opportunities for people and protect the river moving forward. So
yeah, let's kind of build on that. Like, if you think about beaver activities, you have this big floodplain on the Priest River, and that river probably was all over the place.
Yeah.
And beavers were helping kind of encourage that. And then I think log drives were like a big changing element.
Yeah,
there
that
too.
Was something they that happened in the early 1900s, and there's some really famous Ross Hall pictures of those log drives. They call them the river pigs, and these guys basically out there risking their lives to get these big rafts of logs down the river. But it also had the effect of scouring out the river channel with those logs coming down, which that must have been an immense change in the river right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We call it like disconnecting the river from its floodplain. It just kind of drives it down.
It's incised. It's the incision that happens. And you have the highways and the railroads. They all kind of put this river in a box that it was never really, you know, supposed to be in. It wants to move around. Well, that's, you know, not possible in all locations now because certain things we're just not going to be able to change. But
But we can take advantage of it in some places. And
yes,
a lot of that area is public lands. It's federal or it's state. And so it does give us some room in the floodplain to work in, which isn't always true on a lot of the rivers we work on. So there are opportunities. But I think like that disconnection with groundwater, that all has played a big part in the changing temperature and just
the warming of the river.
Lack of habitat.
Okay, so the river's changed a lot in the last 100, 150 years. And you're now wanting to develop a restoration plan. I want you to tell us more about that. But you've already completed a restoration plan for one of the important tributaries, the East River. Tell us a little bit more about what that entails, and then let's dive into what the restoration plan for the Lower Priest itself might be like.
First off, just a little bit more about the East River and why that's kind of where we took a first go at and why it's important. The East River, as I said previously, we still have bull trout spawning up that system, and there's not a lot of them, but it's a really unique migration pattern that people don't know about. It's kind of like, I don't know, are there other places where there's fish that do this?
Not in this area, in this region. There used to be, prior to Albany Falls Dam, the life history of bull trout going, you know, migrating downstream to then go upstream and spawn in the tributaries to the Ponderay. And so, but with Albany Falls, you blocked off the entire lower Ponderay, but you didn't block off the Priest River. So you still have those bull trout populations coming out of that freshwater inland ocean that's so abundant of Lake Ponderay. You get these really big fish that, these migratory bull trout that will come downstream and then upstream and then upstream again into the East River to spawn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then go back out.
It's a little complex. Well, it's a complex life history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's rare. And I mean, historically it probably existed at some level, but those fish also could get to Priest Lake and they could get downstream of Albany Falls. And so there's just been a multitude of pressures there. So the East River is just, it has a big floodplain. It has cold water. You know, it's a nice tributary system, and the lower Priest River, that whole system is massive. And so our undertaking of writing a restoration plan and prioritizing projects on that system, there's some contentious issues paired with the fact it's just complex and there's a lot. So we thought we'd take on doing the East River as kind of a trial run of, and get a feel, because a lot of these folks are laymen to this type of river work and that are on the group. And it's kind of technical what we're doing, prioritizing these projects. So it was a really good adventure in kind of getting used to the process. We shaped a matrix to judge, evaluate restoration projects, and then we used it to develop this plan. So now I think we're well set up to know how the process will go going into
the lower Priest River.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which we're just about to embark on. Mm-hmm.
So what kind of projects might emerge from having a plan like this?
Some of the exciting projects where you have this space are floodplain reconnection type, you know, stage zero, sometimes they call them, or they're, you know, you're trying to get the stream that's been incised into this single channel, get it up onto the floodplain. That might be a project. Those projects are very challenging because they do require a lot of space, but that might be ideally you'd get something like that.
Mm-hmm. There'll probably be like habitat projects, especially where you have a cold water, like intrusion from groundwater or a tributary. You could try to build like wood structure, you know, just logs, basically putting logs in there to try to create some cover and complexity, you know, where you get pools and it leaves a little bit of like a refugia in a spot for fish that are going to migrate up that tributary, or they can rest, because right now, like some summers, there's virtually no differentiation in the water column. Even in the deepest pools, the temperatures are still mid to high 70s. So trying to provide those places where a fish can hang out for a little while and make it through a heat wave would be a good project.
So
repairing plantings. Mm-hmm. Things like mm-hmm. that for yeah. shade and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, create more shade along mm-hmm. the river course. Yeah.
Wetlands work too is always meaningful. Mm. Helps clean, cool water.
Well, how about, I know that operations of the outlet dam play into, for one thing, the water temperature in the lower river, but there's also competing interests mm-hmm. about how the outlet dam might be operated. Property owners on the lake don't want to necessarily see the lake level drawn down to flush more cooler water downstream. Are you guys, is the Priest River Watershed Group engaging people that are, you know, have those concerns on the lake?
Yeah, mm-hmm. there are representatives of the lake on the Watershed Group, which has been good. I mean, like as a representing the tribe, we want the lake to be healthy and well, and we understand that this is a complex issue, but the Priest River and that entire watershed is in the heart of the Aboriginal lands of the Kalispell, and we want the whole system to be healthy, and like this lower portion is suffering, and so you know that's where most of our focus is going to be right now. But but the lake itself, I think the dam, and Aaron can go into this further, they're trying to modernize, you know, work smarter with how they release within the confines that they do have. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's an option to draw down the lake to add water. I mean, their mandate currently, I mean, holds the lake level at a certain level. But they added on to the amount of water that can be held at the lake. And Department of Water Resources is managing that dam, and they're learning how to operate it to try to meet the needs of the lake and the river the best that they can. I mean, like any dam manager on any system, there is always competing interests and there's a lot to take into hand. And I think we've been communicative, the whole group, with Water Resources, and they've presented at many of our meetings, just talking about where we see issues and maybe ways to try to help resolve some of those issues. I definitely think there's interest in understanding the way operations can benefit the system from either side of it. Part of what Water Resources is looking for right now, and I think there's more support coming from other agencies and hopefully from our group as well, is more data. They've been working with very minimal amount of data about inflows on the lake systems and then trying to figure out the best outflows from that. So they're currently getting more, working with DEQ and trying to get more data coming in so that they understand what they have to work with. And then I think it's just a learning process that we're in of how to best manage the dam. But I mean, the dam is definitely a part of, it will be a part of the restoration plan. It's inevitable that
There's a chunk of river that's upstream of the lakes. It's the Upper Priest River.
Yep.
That's where the whole watershed really kind of starts, I guess.
Yep.
Folks that have been, there's a really cool destination on a hike up the Upper Priest to get to what's called the Upper Priest Falls or the American Falls.
Yep.
Does the plan, is it dealing with that part of the lake, of the watershed very much? Or that's really coming from, from roadless areas, or not necessarily roadless, but a lot of natural areas, not much development up there.
I would say that the focus on the Lower Priest River was never meant to like dissect the river from the rest of the watershed, but the grant that has funded our efforts demanded a smaller watershed than the entire watershed. And so we honed in on the place that just has major impacts and hasn't had a huge amount of attention. And so that's why, but it's not that like we want to be negligent of these other waterways. It's just that we're kind of limited in scope, but it's probably makes sense because it's still a huge scope.
And the lower river is the thing that's been most impacted by all these cumulative impacts, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's boil it down to what it might mean to people that are listening. So say I'm somebody who floats or paddles the Priest River, but I'm not a fisherman, don't really care about the fish. Why should I care about the work that the watershed group is doing?
I mean, I would, when you enhance a river, reconnect floodplains, you're benefiting all the wildlife. And I would say that we're reducing wildfire risk, through that kind of reinvigorating like a wet area. I mean, you see fires come through and they don't burn when a river is well connected in that area.
Healthy river,
it's cleaner water,
the river gets too warm, it's subject to algae blooms. There are ways that any user would be affected, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it appeals to me on many, many levels, and I don't fish it. So yeah. I'm still loving floating it, and yeah.
You don't fish it?
No, really.
But you're with TU.
Yeah.
I presume you do fish, though.
A little bit,
Okay. Fish are... They live in really great places that we appreciate as well, right?
Yeah.
So, what does the project mean for the private landowners along the river going downstream? Do they have a voice in the watershed group, and are there concerns from them?
They do, yeah, and I think their perspective is really important as being stewards of their piece of the Priest River. They've been able to bring our attention to challenges that they're seeing, which is really valuable. so that, you know, the Didymo was a very important issue that came out from one of the landowners. I mean, others knew of it, but it was like, you know, that was very, because when you're dealing with it every day, it just has a, it's more real to them and they understand it better than most.
In the Didymo.
Yeah, that was a big one. And just the
you should tell folks what the Didymo is.
I'll let Aaron do that. Oh.
Yeah. Well, Didymo is, it's like a misbehaving species that kind of looks like an algae, but it's more white. It can pick up like a green or brown tone from the surrounding water, but it just coats the rocks.
Makes slimy.
It, yeah. Makes it really hard for things to survive.
Yeah, people think it's algae.
Yeah, people think it's algae. Yeah. But it misbehaves usually on systems below dams for one reason or another, and we don't have a full understanding of why it's misbehaving on this system, but it is, and it is definitely very impactful to the bugs, you know, that feed the fish. It's just hard for things to survive with that much of that growth.
And that's occurring in the river right
it's
now.
It's all through the river, yeah. If you boat
How about
it right
the
now,
upper river where there's almost no human impacts, the upper Priest River? Is Didymo
up
there?
I have not heard of Didymo being a problem.
Yeah. I mean, people that use a lot of waterways, they're not aware. That's really not necessarily a natural condition.
Yep.
These rivers historically had really clean stones in them, not these slippery.
Yeah, it's really... And so going back to the people living on the Priest River, I think... Well, there are actually projects where people have come to the group and been like, my shoreline's eroding, or I feel like I would be willing to do project work on my property. And that is like a service that we're trying to help with, not necessarily leading that project work, but connecting them with the right entities that could help them lead that project work.
Yeah, that's been nice.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's kind of like, we're like a conduit, hopefully, to help improve the river through a bunch of different ways. The restoration plan is one of them. Mm-hmm. And
so I imagine within the group, the watershed group, you have people around the table who don't necessarily agree about a particular water management idea. How do you chart a path when one person's solution might look like another person's problem? Have you had to deal with that even?
We have.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, from the beginning, it's been challenging, you know, just trying to get these folks to trust each other. You know, it takes time to build relationships and to understand that when it boils down to, we all want a healthy Lower Priest River. You know, what does that look like? You know, can differ, but we try to, we have based our decision-making around, you know, consensus. And just trying to, we feel like if we have a collaborative that can come to consensus, that decision will be pretty durable. And so that we can, and then that hopefully will have political support. And so we have, we feel, you know, we're not going to agree on everything, but where we can, let's leverage those things and move them forward. It's been very rewarding and very, very frustrating. I'm glad we did it.
And I think we always go back to the science. This is fundamentally a scientific process. And so nothing is off the table. When it comes to a restoration plan, we will evaluate all things that could bring value to the system. And I think it's been helpful for the group to see that really at work, having people, experts, kind of guiding that process. And then in the end, when we rank projects and prioritize them, there may be a project on there that somebody's not comfortable with, but there is a social element and economic element to all of that ranking. So it will come out in the score of the project. So we look at all projects, we cover uncomfortable territory, but there's, I think, a trust in the process that this is really like science-based, but we still have months to go. We probably have a couple of years to go. So.
Well, that was going to be my question. So when do you think you'll actually have all the work done and have a restoration plan for the Lower Priest River?
Well, this grant runs out early 2028.
The grant was provided by
Bureau of Reclamation.
Okay.
And this is the second round of it. We've run through two rounds of it. Our goal is to have that restoration plan completed by that point in time. And the bulk of that work is being done by the tribes. So we're helping doing the prioritization, but the tribe's doing the assessment, and then we have lots of other experts kind of helping to weigh in that ranking process.
Is there a lead person who will write the plan up, given once all the data has been accumulated?
So the assessment is being written by Eric Bernstein, a hydrogeologist, and his team at the tribe. And then the actual document, the restoration plan, will be written by...
It may be a collaboration between us. With the East River, that's what the tribe did, the assessment, came up with a bunch of different project ideas, and then we ranked the projects as a group. And it took us probably four whole meetings to do that. And then once those are ranked and we have those results, we just package them up into the restoration plan, and which includes the assessment and those rankings. So it'll be similar, but bigger.
And I know part of the answer to this question is how can the public weigh in on the plan and the work of the Peace River Watershed Group?
I mean, well, right now we have a survey online.
There we go. That's the part I knew about.
And we have a website.
There's a website.
So people can learn a little bit about it.
That's PriestRiverWG.org is the website. And there, if you go on there, you'll see a link to the survey.
Yeah.
And I took the survey. It only takes a few minutes.
Yeah. And that's a really ground level way to engage. We love people to come to our meetings. We have monthly meetings. The first Thursday of every month, at usually 4:30 to 6:30 at the Priest River, at the library in Priest River. And I mean, we go deep. It can be a lot for people, but the public's welcome. We're always looking for new members too. As we start this new endeavor on the Lower Priest River, it's actually an exceptional time. If somebody wanted to commit 2 years to working on this, we'd love it. Landowners on the Priest Lake or on Priest River, we would love to have more.
Our next meeting is September 3rd.
4 o'clock.
At 4 o'clock at the Priest River Library. But that Eric will be presenting on the Lower Priest. It's going to be pretty cool. So if the public was interested, that would be a good meeting to go to, because it would be a lot of foundational information about the Priest River.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then after that, is there a certain day of the month that you meet, the third?
Yes, the first Thursday.
The first Thursday of each month.
Every month. Mm-hmm.
And you can get more information about that at PriestRiverWG.org, mm-hmm. I presume, your website.
And people can also email me, which you can get to through the website as well. You can just email the website address, info@PriestRiverWG.org, and get added to a list. And I always send up the agendas and everything too. Mm-hmm. So.
I have one more question, then you guys can throw in anything that I miss. But let's say we're having a conversation about this in 10 years, and the Peace River Watershed Group has been successful. What would you hope is noticeably different about the Lower Peace River?
I guess fundamentally, coming from my view of this system for 15 years, I've kind of worked closely with it, is that people know about it. So that's the first thing, is that people know.
Awareness.
And there is an awareness that this river is special, and that it deserves some focus and attention, and that it's part of a system, a very beloved system. But then, I mean, I would hope that in 10 years we've implemented some of our projects and some of the bigger projects, and that we have pockets. Hopefully fish maybe aren't trending downwards, or we at least understand. Some of this is also getting at a better understanding of what's going on with cutthroat. We know numbers are going down. We're not positive about, but just to really understand what's at the root of that. But I don't think that in 10 years you're going to restore this whole system, to be honest. But
it takes longer than 10 years.
Oh, yeah. It takes longer than 10 years. But
you could start to see some changes in that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Didymo, if we could understand how to, but that's an international question. Like, it's not understood really how to manage Didymo. So that might be something that happens on the side that we could then apply.
Get rid of the slime.
Yeah, you got to get rid of the slime. I don't want to live there if I'm a stone fly larva.
Bring the native fish back.
Bring in the native fish back.
Mm-hmm. Seeing cutthroat. Yeah, there's a lot of brook trout on that system as well. So brook trout management's been part of the discussion, mm-hmm. which is another kind of uncomfortable
yeah.
discussion where people have really mixed feelings.
Because brook trout isn't native.
It's not native.
To that river.
No.
Mm-hmm. And they're considered, I'm not going to be able to think the word, they can't, like, you know, they don't exist very well with West Slope cutthroat. They're mm-hmm. competitors. And
unfortunately, they're a very pretty fish.
Very pretty fish.
Yeah, and they taste good.
Yeah. So fish them.
Well, Aaron Plue and Mike Lithgow, anything else that you want to say about the Peace River Watershed Group?
I'll add that, you know, one of our tribal elders, when asked about, you know, this type of a process, and you know, they were kind of being guided towards, don't you want to be self-sufficient? Like, this is, you know, the river will provide for you and allow you to be, you know, self-sufficient. And he said that it was more important to be collaboratively sufficient, that we've never been self-sufficient, that this river needs more than just the tribe. It needs all of us to care for it and love it and bring it back. And I think we're there. I think we have the right people at the table to make big change. And I'm proud of that. And I'm thankful that that people do care.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of similar. I mean, we started this right at the cusp of 2024. So it was just coming into 2024. And we've had this group of people, some of them with, you know, it's just their personal time showing up for 2.5 years in kind of uncomfortable conversations. It's not easy. It's for me, it's just been a real pleasure to, like, see us make it this far even. And people's true interest in wanting to understand the system and learning more and just building respect and understanding for all the scientists that are working and are in our waterways. And just, like, I've just really appreciated the whole endeavor. Mm-hmm. It's definitely something that I think it would be good for anybody to kind of to really work in a collaborative environment. And yeah.
Well, Aaron and Mike, thank you for coming in to speak. And also, I'll throw it out there again, learn more about the group at priestriverwg.org. And you can take the survey and sign up for newsletters and start to engage that way. The Peace River is a gorgeous river and a real great asset here.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Yeah.